This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Welcome on Inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak bringing you the latest and greatest on the Saints after, I hate to call it an ugly win because any victory is pretty, but 14-11. It was a rough one to get through, Jeff, and there's the confetti flying down from the MetLife rafters. A victory is a victory, but in this case, even when the Saints win, Jeff, they still lose as well.
Yeah, that was ugly. You know, the only thing that went right for the Giants in that game, I think, was whoever bought the plane that was flying overhead in the pregame that said, John Mara, please fix this dumpster fire, which I didn't see. I only heard about it, I think, because it wasn't flying over the field. I think there's probably like protected airspace there.
So it was like a certain circumference it was around.
Yeah. And you know, and this is funny. So if you go back and you look at Jeff Ireland's tenure with the Dolphins, one thing that happened during that tenure, he was the GM, and that also happened to him, is Dolphins fans or a Dolphin fan, you know, maybe one very affluent fan. Like, I don't know if this was a team effort or a one guy. Definitely wasn't Malik Nabers. He made it clear he did not pay for the plane. That was his only comment about it. But someone did that to Jeff Ireland. There was a plane circling before one of their games that said, fire Jeff Ireland or something.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So Jeff probably heard that story and thought back to his not so successful run as the Dolphins GM. But I don't know if a lot of people realize that, because Jeff was the Dolphins GM and it did not go well. And he got a plane. He got a plane. He got the plane treatment too. So the Giants and Jeff have that in common.
Wonder how much that costs.
That's a good question. If anyone in the chat has ever has ever conscripted a advertising plane or whatever, a banner plane, let us know how much it cost you, because it's definitely not cheap. I'll tell you that much. There's actually been a blimp flying over New Orleans advertising the Netflix Christmas Day game. Which is like, man, Netflix is really pulling out all the stops for this one. Hopefully they can at least stream it. But either way, let's get into this. This is going to be our standard post-game podcast. The Saints have kept their hopes alive. Hopes is a word that we'll use. It's not really a great hope. I think their chance at the playoffs going into the game was 1%, and it skyrocketed to a whole 2%. So there you have that. It's really going to, you know, if they can beat Washington, then we can start having real conversations about it this week. If they can't, then it's basically over.
Right.
The Falcons are doing everything in their power to make sure the Saints can't just give up on this season. Every team in the NFC South, I looked this up this morning, every team in the NFC South has had at least a 4-game losing streak this year. The Saints have had 7. The Bucs and Falcons have both had 4, and the Falcons is ongoing at 4, so it could get longer. And the Panthers had 5. So, you know, I don't think that happens very often where all 4 teams in a division had at least a 4-game losing streak.
Fortunately, I think the Falcons, they get the Raiders, then the Giants, like, back-to-back.
Yeah, no, the Falcons, their schedule lightens up significantly
right
over the next few weeks. But that's neither here nor there. Like, they were 6-3. They're now 6-7. They have one more win than the Saints this year. Think about that. Like, as good as the first half of this season went for the Falcons, they are one game better than the Saints. Now, they're going to win that tiebreaker either way because of their division record. But what a disgrace for Kirk Cousins going and back to face his former team in the Vikings and just getting taken apart. He's setting records for futility. I think he's like the first quarterback since 2005 and Brett Favre to have like 3 games where he threw 8 interceptions and no touchdown passes. It's a mess. But we're here to talk about the other disgraceful game that happened this week. And the Saints were a part of that. Going up against the Giants, we can start with the news. Derek Carr, obviously, you know, whatever was going through his mind when he decided to try to do the high jump, basically, you know, like a Superman jump. If he had done a high jump for him, he might have survived. He actually
right.
did Superman for him going over. And it's like, you know, second down, man, second down. You don't need it all. You know, you got to give him some credit for kind of selling out for his team. But sounds like he's dealing with a fractured hand. We'll find out more today, probably when Darren Rizzi talks. He's scheduled to talk about 1:15. It's his left hand, so it's his non-throwing hand. So it's not a definite that he misses time, but definitely not what you want to be dealing with at this point in the season. He's also sounds like he's in the concussion protocol, so that's something we've seen him do that. I mean, you look at the last 2 years for Derek Carr. What is this, the 5th time he's left a game early with an injury?
Yes, since coming here, the dude has definitely been banged up a ton. And yeah, I wonder too, what made him take that much of a leap? We kind of joked about it coming on before this pod that, you know, he got so high. Derek's got hops.
I didn't know he could jump that high. Yeah, I think he, you know, because it was kind of like a full sprint to a jump, right? Like he wasn't just I'm going to hurdle this guy. I think the issue is he was trying to leap kind of to safety. But then as he got into the midair, Kevin Austin's there and he kind of like, you know, he got thrown off course and then he just had nothing but going straight down into his left wrist and his head hit the ground. But yeah, and the thing is like it was 3rd and 1, but Derek going off the field is a problem there because now the Giants are like, they're going to run it. You know, like there's no question. They don't have to question it at all. Like they're not putting Jake Haener in the game cold off the bench. No time to warm up or anything and saying, all right, buddy, let's throw a pass. So they gave the ball to Kendre Miller. I was surprised they didn't give it why Alvin wasn't in the game at that point. Shows you some confidence in Kendre Miller. But yeah, so Derek, you know, so let's kind of go back. So Derek, he left the game early in week 3 against the Packers last year with the AC joint sprain. He left the game early in week 10 against the Vikings. I believe that was a concussion protocol. He then left a game against the Lions early. I think that was the 3rd quarter, late in the 3rd quarter, maybe early 4th quarter. That was another concussion protocol issue. Week 5 of this year, left in the early in the 4th quarter with the oblique injury that actually cost him the next 3 games. This is the first time he's actually missed games with an injury. And now you're dealing with some sort of hand injury. I think the key is going to be, is it a hand injury or is it a wrist injury? Because if you just kind of have a broken finger or maybe a small fracture, you could probably brace it up and just be careful with it. If it's a wrist injury, your natural, you know, tendency is going to be to brace yourself. And you can definitely mess up a wrist injury a lot worse if you're not careful. So that's what
it looked like a wrist, but yeah, I'm no doctor, obviously.
Right. Like if you see the impact, like it's not going to be your hand. It didn't get stepped on or anything. So I think that's going to be the question. If it's like hand, I think there's a chance he plays. If it's anything below the hand to this point with this wrist joint, I think you're going to have a hard time. Either way, I bet you Derek's going to want to play.
He's going to take a snap.
Well, that's the other question is, can you receive the snap without it being an issue? Right.
Right. So
that's going to be a question you have to answer throughout the week. And then the next question beyond that is, do you go with Jake Haener or Spencer Rattler? My inclination would be Jake Haener, just because, you know, I think he's done all the work, deserves a shot to at least, you know, get some run, right? Like, you gave Spencer his three starts. Wouldn't say he did anything that makes you desperate to go back to him this year. And so, you know, I think it would be, I don't want to say fair, because fair doesn't really matter, but I think it would be reasonable to say, hey, let's see what Jake has, so that you go into the offseason with an idea on both guys. And so we'll, that's a bridge you'll cross if it exists and you have to walk across it. But either way, it was definitely not how you wanted to end that game.
No, and like you said, the question going forward, if it's not Derek, who? And then, I mean, man, just this offense has struggled so much this season, besides obviously the first two games. And I know we're going to get into it in our up and down segment, but the definitely a big disappointment from that side of the ball against a Giants defense that we thought that was just going to get either run over or picked apart.
Yeah, neither of those things really happened.
No.
You know, I think, and you know, so let's just get into the studs and duds. Let's start with the up, because it is a win. So I do want to talk about that. But yeah, the offensive line is definitely in the down, just because I had higher hopes for that group. It's the first time we've seen them healthy. Maybe there's a little rust involved. You haven't really been getting a ton of practice for Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick, Cesar Ruiz. They were all out there. Didn't look like maybe things were clicking at certain points of that game. But let's just start with the up. But you know, so first up for me, you got to talk about Brian Brzee. Like, we can't have this conversation, we can't do this podcast without talking up Brian Brzee. And you know, he's a guy that I think, you know, when you draft a guy in the first round, you expect them to kind of have their fingerprints on games, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the expectation. When you draft a guy in the second or third round, your hope is that they develop into a starter, but there's a little bit more wiggle room there. Like, you know, the upside is going to be capped a little bit, because if you were a top end upside player, you would have been a first round pick. Now, Brian was a late first round pick, so you're going to have a little bit more grace than maybe a top 10 pick. But at the end of the day, like, one of the reasons Peyton Turner is so frustrating is because he was a first round pick. And now we're just settling for him getting on the field.
Right.
Like, there hasn't been a single game throughout the course of his NFL career to this point where you would say he was one of the chief reasons you won the game. Like, he impacted that game in such a way that you won it because he was out there. Right. Whether it was one of seven factors or one of three factors or one of one factor. Like, there has never been a game that you look at and say, okay, that we won this game because we have Peyton Turner. This was a game that you won because you had Brian Brzee out there. And for a few reasons, it wasn't just the blocked field goal, but the blocked field goal is such a good indicator of, like, okay, why can he be special? Because when you're 300 pounds and you have the athleticism to leap over an offensive lineman and not hit him, and not, he did stumble a little bit, but he kept his feet long enough to get up there. Like, the Giants, one of the Giants' two wins this year came in exactly that fashion. The difference is Isaiah Simmons is the player that did it for them. One of the best athletes in the NFL. Like, you go back to the combine, he was a first round pick because he was a freak athlete. Like, there's a big difference between Isaiah Simmons doing that and Brian Brzee doing that. But no, you gotta give him a ton of credit. I was really impressed with what he did. And you know, he also got back, like, the pass rush in that game. They were after Drew Lock all day. They only got two sacks. This should have been more. The refs had a really wide definition of what in the area was, apparently, in that game, because Drew Lock got away with several, like, that's not a pass. What is this? But yeah, you know, you got to give Brzee a lot of credit, I think.
Yes, it's saving us from having to go through overtime of that game for sure, because for the most part, just terrible football, a snooze fest. It's like, I can't believe I'm watching this. And yeah, the most action was right at the end of the game.
Yeah, it got interesting at the end there. It sure did. This is the conversation I had with Brian Brzee coming off the field. I apologize in advance because the Odyssey intro music is going to play and it's going to be loud.
Big bungle boom.
Okay, Brian, you know, obviously that came down to the wire. What did you see on that last play?
Man, you know, we worked that all week, you know, just in case we had that play in the back pocket. You know, all the guys on the D-line did a great job executing, helping me get up and over and just do a hand up like a prayer, and God answered it. So
you seem to have a knack for that. I've seen you bat down a lot of passes. Do you work on that? How much time do you spend throughout the week knocking stuff down?
Honestly, no. I don't know. You know, it's just I guess, a knack that you know, I'm blessed with, and I don't know if basketball maybe helped me in my early days, but yeah, man, it's I had a few blocks today, and then that obviously big play at the end, but you know, there wasn't much looking or seeing what was going on in that last play. It was just throwing up a hand and hoping for the best.
Yeah, for this defense, obviously you've had a few opportunities to close out games like this. Hasn't always gone your way. How did it feel to close this one out?
Man, it felt great. You know, just getting a win like that, you know, just backs against the wall and being able to finish it and get the job done, man. It's awesome. Just super proud of everybody on this team. I mean, just staying the course and getting it done.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Congrats. Yeah, and you know, the last answer there is funny because it's like the defense didn't really close it out. but, you know, it still ended their way. So it just feels good. And I'm not putting that game on the defense. Like, I thought the defense actually had an excellent day. And the Giants are just better at anyone in the NFL at finding ways to lose. But like, you look at how the defense got set up in that game, the fact that they were able to hold serve as long as they did, the Giants starting field position on their first six drives. Look at this. The first drive started at the Saints 48. Next drive, Giants 43. Next drive, Giants 32, which starting a drive at their 32-yard line was essentially as close as they got to being backed up in the first half, which is like you could kick a ball out of the end zone on a kickoff and they wouldn't get to the 32. That was the furthest back they started. Next drive started at the Giants 49. Next drive started at the Saints 48. Next drive started at the Giants 49. So five of their first six offensive possessions, the Giants, started at their own 42-yard line or better. Two of them were in Saints territory, and two of them were at the Giants 49-yard line, which is basically Saints territory. You know how many points they got? Three. Three goddamn points that entire span. So you got to give the defense credit. Like, they were put in bad positions over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I think that was six. And they held up, right? You know, and the Giants aren't good, but they were going to try to run the ball. The Saints were able to stop them from running the ball. So, you know, at least the running backs, I think Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary combined for 53 yards on something like 17 carries in that range. So that's a win in terms of what the Saints have been able to do this year against run games, against opposing run games. So, no, I think the defensive line in general, Brian Brzee is a big part of that. I thought they had a really strong day.
Yeah, you mentioned that obviously with the D-line too. I saw, what was it, Next Gen Stats talking about the amount of pressure that what's his name? I lost it now. Chase Young, sorry, was applying, and it was nice to see him at least have some positive news about him.
No, they were in the backfield all day. That's why it's frustrating. You look at the final line and it's like two sacks. How is it only two sacks?
Yeah.
And even one of those was on an intentional grounding that they actually called. I mean, Drew Lock could have been called for intentional grounding five different times. He threw there was at least seven or eight balls that he just threw up. And it was like, you know, a couple of them, like Chase Young. You know, Tyron was pissed for a lot of reasons at the end of that game. One of the reasons was like there was twice that he probably could have had a pick, but the guy in front of him, one of them was Kool-Aid. It was Chase Young trying to get an interception and dropping it, and Tyron was just standing there waiting. And then I can't remember who the second one was, but Kool-Aid McKinstry was there. Oh, it was DeMario who dove in front of him and tried to intercept the ball. And Kool-Aid, if DeMario's not there, the ball just goes right into his hands. And so, like, Drew Lock was like a hair away from a three or four interception game. And like, you know, he was living on the edge and the Saints didn't make it pay.
But I kept thinking we were going to see DeVito and they didn't pull the trigger.
They did one time for that weird zone read why, I don't know. The Giants fans got really excited when he ran onto the field. And then it was very similar. If you go back to the Lions game last year, when Taysom Hill would come in, they would cheer and then Derek Carr would come back in and they would boo. That's what happened to Drew Lock yesterday, so he must feel loved in that building. But no, I mean, you look at the defense and you talk about pressures, you can talk about whatever. Colin Saunders had two quarterback hits. Demario Davis had a quarterback hit. Carl Granderson had three quarterback hits. Brian Brzee had two quarterback hits and the sack. Colin Saunders also had a sack. Cam Jordan had two quarterback hits. Chase Young had three quarterback hits. Brian Brzee, as you mentioned, also had those two passes batted down.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that he's just really good at. I was expecting him to say, like, yeah, I work on that. He doesn't work on that. You know, I think last year he had six, and this year he has three. So you're talking about nine passes defensed in 2 years. Like, a lot of defensive backs would take those numbers. You're talking about a defensive tackle who, you know, wasn't even at the top of the rotation last year. So definitely something he's good at. And you can impact games like that. J.J. Watt was always one of the best at just batting balls down, right? And eventually those turn into picks too. Like, I don't think that any of his have turned into interceptions yet. But over the course of time, you get your hand on enough balls, it's going to come down in one of your teammates' hands. Now, sometimes it also comes down in a Malik Nabers' hands for a two-point conversion, but that's neither here nor there. But no, I thought just in general, the defensive line, quarterback runs notwithstanding, had a really strong day.
No, for sure. You end up with Drew Lock as their leading rusher on the day. Like you said, you'll take that all day, any day. It wasn't anything that hurt you too badly. There were some of the Drew Lock runs obviously came at inopportune times, but overall, definitely was impressed with the run D because that was a big concern when you had a guy like Tracy coming into the game averaging about 5 yards a carry.
Yeah, and he really did nothing. He had the touchdown run, but that was kind of just, you know, it was what it was. Let's move on to another topic. So, Kendre Miller, you know, you're going to look at the stat line and you're going to say, okay, what, 10 carries, 32 yards and a touchdown, 3.2 yards per carry. He's not going to jump off the line, but for one thing, he got through the game. He's healthy. So that's obviously been a challenge for him. And so seeing him get like he didn't get through the Chargers game in week 8. He ended up with an injury. He went into the tent. Didn't go into the tent once yesterday. You know, stayed on the field. He's a physical runner, but also a finesse runner, which is really interesting when you watch him. Like, you look at him and you think, oh, he must be like a bruising back. But then you see him like squeeze through some gaps. And, you know, he's just able to turn. Like, every time you see him get the ball, it's like he's the type of runner that always seems to get two or three more yards.
Yes.
Than you would think are there to be had. There was a run on the sideline that he just kind of like got skinny. Like, I thought he was just going to get hit, go out of bounds with 2-3 yard gain. He got skinny, like skirted through a hole and got like 6 or 7 more yards. That's just the type of runner he is. And that's why when he's out there, he's a weapon for you. And, you know, obviously in a game where maybe you ran the ball a little better, it would mean more because Alvin, you know, he had 17 carries for 44 yards. It was not a good run day for anybody. But no, I mean,
negative runs. Oh, man.
They had 10 of them.
10
tackles for loss, I think the Giants had. You know how many the Saints had? Guess. Goose egg. They had 2 sacks. So those technically go down as tackles for loss.
Right.
But they did not tackle. Like, for in a game where the Giants averaged 2.8 yards per carry or 2.9 yards per carry, not getting a single tackle behind the line of scrimmage at a running back is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The Saints had a couple passes that were taken down behind the line of scrimmage. Giants defense played well. You do have to give them a little credit. Like, I thought their defense did play well, particularly up front. Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, good players. You know, they got after Derek. Saints didn't block him particularly well. But no, so this is Darren Rizzi talking about Kendre Miller's day.
Kendre, again, is showing you why we drafted him where we drafted him. He made some really, really dynamic runs, I thought. You know, Kendre has a unique ability of making an 8-yard run look really, really good. And, you know, making people miss, you know, getting some tough yards. And again, you know, just a small sample there. But again, the touchdown run he has where he just keeps his, you know, power. And when I talked about in the beginning of the week a change of pace back, that's really what I was talking about. You know, a guy that can, you know, just have a little bit of a different style. And that's a big deal. You know, we're losing Taysom. You know, we don't become one-dimensional with Alvin. We have another guy that can get us some tough yards. And so he had a nice kick return today, right? I don't know off the top of my head how many yard, 31-yard kick return. That really nice touchdown run. Some really good make you miss. So, you know, Kendre's got to just stay consistent. That's been his thing, right? So we got to do that again next week. We got to have another good practice week. We got to just, you know, stay healthy. And so those are the things. But you saw the flashes today of the athletic ability. That's the guy we knew we were drafting.
You've got a guy like that, and he's maybe beaten down mentally a little bit from all the injuries and all the, you know, the doghouse talk, which obviously you addressed. Now, how important is getting on the field and actually doing it as opposed to, you know, you can talk all you want?
It's very important. It's very important to get out there and just show, you know, you can always sit here and say, well, this and well, that, and maybe this and maybe that, but to actually show the proof. And that's the thing about Kendre. The times that he's been on the field for us, like today, you see it. And anybody that knows football sees it. You see a very good running back. That's what you see. And again, is he there yet? Has he reached the pinnacle? No. He's got plenty of room for growth. But staying healthy, staying consistent for him is the big thing. And actually coming out showing it rather than just saying, oh, he looks good in practice, or, you know, oh, he looked really good in college. Man, you saw it today, what he did.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He also had a kick return, brought back 32, 33 yards. I mean, there haven't been many successful kick returns for the Saints this year, and he has two of them. Another one was Taysom Hill, had a nice return. You know, it's not something that Kendre's done. I think he said yesterday he hasn't returned a kick prior to week 8 against the Chargers. He hadn't returned a kick since high school. So, you know, it's something he can do. The more you can do, the better. And the Saints haven't, I wouldn't say they've been particularly good on kick returns this year. Which is kind of disappointing when you're talking about, you know, Rizzi and his impact in that whole role change. But I just think he adds an element to this team that they need, particularly with some of these missing weapons. And we'll find out more this week about Chris Olave and exactly where he's at. He was on the field each of the last 2 weeks in terms of travel with the team this week, which is good to see. Week 15 will be the first week he could potentially come back. I don't expect him to come back, but he could. But no, it's good to see Kendre out there. He's I think in the sense of like just building confidence and in the fact that he can be an NFL player, and you know he's not going to have the rug pulled out from under him the way it seemed to happen this year a lot. I think that's good for him, and so I'm rooting for him. He's a nice kid. He works. I think he works hard. I think he's just had a lot of bad luck.
I really wanted more carries for him in the game. He did have 10, but I felt like there could have been more. I do get that it was his first game back in action in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good number, right? Like Alvin got 17, he got 10. Like I think that's about where you want it to be. In a game where you sustained more offense, maybe you could have done a little more. Saints didn't have a lot of extended drives. But, you know, like that touchdown run was, you know, both of his career touchdown runs have been similar in that way of like, I didn't think either was going to get into the end zone when the play started. The other one was week 18 against the Falcons where he kind of did the same thing. He was like, the play was kind of dead to the outside. He cut it back and just kind of powered his way in. No, he's got a good combination, like finesse and power. He'll tell you that himself. You know, like he takes pride in that. Like it's not, and I think that's important for a running back. To not just be the, okay, I'm going to run hard and see if I can get 2 yards out of this. Like, you know, I want to find a hole. I want to find a gap, accelerate through it. I don't need to be running full speed at all times. You know, like if you ask Alvin, I bet he would tell you that, like, he almost never runs full speed.
Right. It's amazing.
But when he does, he has a reason to, because he's got a seam and he's going to hit it. You know, and if you're trying to just go 100 all the time, you're going to miss gaps. You're not going to see cutback lanes. So I think that's what he does well. And so hopefully he can keep that going.
No, definitely, you know, anxious to see more from him. Plus, I was lucky enough before this game, I grabbed him off the fantasy football waiver wire. So I want to see more usage in him.
Yeah, I got him in a couple leagues, mainly because I could still put him on IR for this week.
Right.
I also got Isaac Garendo. That worked out for me, although he's dealing with injury. But now you look at a team like the Lions, and like what makes the Lions so effective?
Right.
You know, Like, they have a really good offensive coordinator. They have a lot of playmakers, but it's that two-headed running back tandem, but of David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, that just, it's like so difficult to stop. And they're able to sustain drives. They're able to force defenses to do things they're uncomfortable with. They can't sit back in the shell coverage because you're going to pound them over the head. That's what NFL teams want to do right now, is they want to sit back with two deep safeties and say, we're going to keep everything in front of us, right? Well, you know, if you can rip off 5-6 yard runs consistently, they're not going to be able to do that. And that opens everything up down the field. So, you know, I hope that you can see something like that with Alvin and Kendre. You know, like, there is more than enough bandwidth on this offense to support two running backs. And you can start getting on the field at the same time. The Kendre's touchdown run, Alvin was on the field. Kendre got the ball and he scored. So we'll see. But he's definitely a stock up player for me.
Hopefully can be our new version of Boom and Zoom there.
Right. Right. Well, when has the Saints offense been better than when you had Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, like, both hitting at the same time? Because I don't know if it has been.
The good old days with airheads on the sideline.
Yeah.
So much fun going on. Yeah.
But all right. So a couple more that I want to hit. We don't have to spend a ton of time on them. I thought the tight ends had a really, you know, the tight ends have been really coming on. Definitely not guys that you're going to talk about a ton throughout the course of the week, but Juwan Johnson, Foster Moreau combined for 7 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. Both guys had 30-plus yard receiving plays. Foster's was this really pretty one-handed catch. Like, he'll do stuff occasionally where you're just like, oh, yeah, that's right. Foster Moreau is like a 1% athlete. Like, he is an elite athlete, and you forget because he doesn't really do a ton, and he's mostly blocking. But he can get stuff done in the passing game, and Derek trusts him, obviously, as much as anybody. But no, I think those guys, if you're going to sustain offense, you need those guys to be involved. They need to be better in the blocking game.
Right. But, I was going to say that. Not so great in the blocking, but yeah, at least they were more involved with the pass catching.
Yeah, you need one or the other. You know, it'd be nice if you had both, but if you're not going to be an elite blocker, I do need you to make impact plays down the field. Dallin Hulker also got involved. His first career catch, it was a nice grab. It was 10 yards, first down. So, you know, like, you're talking about tight ends in this game, 100 yards. That's kind of how I look at tight ends. I think people have the tendency to look at, okay, oh, Foster only had 2 catches for 40 yards. Juwan had 4 catches for 50 yards, right? Like, neither of those numbers are jump off the page. But when I look at the tight end production, I put them together. And I say, what did you get out of the tight end position? I don't care who it was, right? And when you're talking about 7 catches for 100 yards, that's a really good tight end day and a touchdown. So you got to give those guys credit.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, positive to see there. The blocking, not so great, though.
No, and then they'll get better. I mean, I don't think that it was all on the tight end. I think in the run game, it's the tight ends and pass protection. I think it was more about the edges and the tackles just not getting the job done. But, you know, a couple more. I thought Alante Taylor and Khalid McKinstry played well. You know, again, like, you, it's easy to get caught up in the last couple drives and say, like, oh, what happened? Again, we talked about, like, you look at where the Giants started all those drives from. That's prime shot play territory. That's we're going for it. We're gonna test you, and they held up. I thought Alante Taylor had a very good day. Kool-Aid had a solid day, but some issues. You know, there was one play where he just kind of lost the ball, didn't know where it was. And I want to say it was either Malik or Wandale that came down with it. You know, there was several plays that Drew Lock just put up a prayer and it got answered. So you don't put that on the defensive backs. I just think both those guys, they're improving week over week, right? And you're seeing them get better, particularly Kool-Aid. You're kind of learning about in real time. You know, Alante, I don't know if he allowed a catch in that game. One where he kind of dug the ball out on Malik. Who I wouldn't say, you know, I don't know if what percentage he was playing at. Definitely wasn't 100%. But I just thought, you know, there's areas of this team that I'm watching closely, even beyond, like, yeah, they're still mathematically alive in the playoff race, but that's not what I'm really watching for. I'm watching, okay, can these young defensive backs develop over the course of this season? So you go into next year feeling like these guys can get the job done. These young tight ends, like, what can you get out of them? The offensive line, how does that look? You know, are these tackles regressing, which I think they are a tiny bit. You know, Isaiah Foskey got on the field in that game, which, you know, sounds like nothing, but he got 0 snaps, like, at all this season. So getting him in the rotation will be good. stuff like that, you know. And so I think to this point, you've seen positivity. Even in a game that was ugly, you can pull positives out of it. And that's what we're hoping to see.
I'll give shout outs too. I thought DeMario had a decent game, and also Ugo Amadi leading the team in tackles.
Ugo's just doing his thing.
Yeah, man.
You know, he's not going to win every rep, but he's going to compete every rep. Like, you're going to get competition. He had one really nice breakup late in the game over the middle of the field. He's a little guy, which is, you know, it's funny watching him go up against Wandale Robinson, because like Wandale's like 5'8". It's the first time all year that Ugo's had a size advantage. But no, and DeMario, yeah, he got that interception. He joked after the Browns game that he was ordering a new set of hands in the mail. Apparently those came in. But what now he needs to order is a new pair of legs, because what the hell are you doing, man? Why wouldn't you run? Why didn't you run the ball?
I still haven't gone back to look at it, but I guess he didn't slip, because that's what I was thinking.
No, I think he was just so excited that he intercepted it that he forgot he's supposed to return it.
Okay.
There's no one around him. And he figured it out after. But it was like he went back to college rules and was like, I went down, so I can't run. Like, no, go, run. What are you doing? Because, you know, I don't know if he would have scored. He scored after he finally remembered to run, but that was because the play was dead. Like, when you kind of give yourself up, you can't then run. You know, and that's a very discretionary thing for the refs. But it is to protect the defense, because, you know, there's rules in place that, like, once you give yourself up, if they hit you, then it's a penalty on them. So you can't take advantage of that rule. So, you know, once the refs deem that you have not made any attempt to return it, they will blow the play dead. But I mean, if he and that was a big point in the game, like the reason you got to a field goal attempt to tie it for the Giants was, well, you had to give them the ball back after that. And so if he returns that to, you know, 20, 30 yards even, and you're talking about, you know, you might have a field goal to go up 6 instead of 3. So they have to try to score, which, I don't know, maybe that would have worked against you. But, you know, and maybe he scores. Like, who on the Giants offense is really trying to tackle a motivated DeMario Davis trying to get into the end zone? Like, he runs like a fullback when he gets the ball in his hands. So that was definitely a kind of a brain cramp moment for him. Because, like, there was no one around him. It's not like he thought he was touched. I think he just forgot in that moment. He got too excited. He doesn't get a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, it was definitely – that's why I said I was wondering. I'm like, did he slip? Nope.
But he caught it. I think that's what it was. Is he's had so many close interceptions that he finally caught one, and his mind, that's all he was thinking about, was like, I got it.
Well, more body parts to order for DeMario. Like, yeah,
he start, you know, it's like going to be the Frankenstein of linebackers. Is, just start installing more and more body parts. But yeah, that's all I got in terms of stock up guys. Is there anyone else? Otherwise, we can move on.
No, not really. Overall, you know, even though it was a win, it wasn't the easiest stock ups, you know, segment, because it was just an ugly overall game.
It was ugly. The only other guy I'll mention is MVS, and I'm not even saying stock up so much as I thought what I liked about this game is, you know, it wasn't all just shot plays.
Right.
He was your leading receiver, 4 catches, 51 yards. The long was 22. So, you know, he's making impact plays in the offense. It was that he was the one with the third and five conversion. When you got pinned back at your 2-yard line, again, this game went every way the Giants could have hoped it went, other than scoring points, which that's such a Giants thing to say. They lose games in ways that no one else would even consider losing games. But no, I just thought, like, you need a wide receiver that can move the chains. And he was that for them in this game. I didn't think it was a particularly good day for a lot of the wide receivers. I thought Kevin Austin had a rough day. You know, Dante Pettis wasn't really involved. Cedric Wilson had a nice grab on a third down.
Like, whoa, Cedric Wilson is around.
I keep forgetting he's there.
Right.
You know? He'll have like one catch a week. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Good for him. But no, that's it. So let's wrap that up. We'll come back. We'll talk about the duds, and then we'll come back in the final segment with a live mailbag. So get your comments, questions in there. I imagine we could talk a good bit about Jake Haen or Spencer Rattler, that conversation, and we'll see how that goes. But again, this is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. We're coming at you after the Saints beat the Giants 14-11. The Saints are now 5-8. Only one game different from last year. Last year they were 5-7. So these two seasons are actually not that far off. But either way, we're going to talk about what went wrong which a good bit went wrong. But we'll talk about it. This is Inside Black and Gold. Make sure to subscribe. We'll be right back.